All right, 11:03, hour two, Gary Sharp Show. There's George, who I thought would walk in today. I know it's not his team, but I thought you'd be rocking a Colin Sexton jersey.
I tried to find one.
He got himself some buckets last night.
Sure did.
He messed with the Big Three debut in Brooklyn. Don't worry about it. Hey, the Big Three for the Heat, their debut, they only scored 80 points total. They turned the ball over 15 times. Nets fans, it gets better from here.
Oh, boy.
Like what I did there?
Yeah.
Yes. Let's welcome in basketball aficionado, Jacob Dilla from Hale Varsity. There was a lot of basketball last night. We'll talk about Creighton and Providence. Did you see the debut of the Big Three in Brooklyn?
I did not see any of it. I kind of saw how it went, but I was watching Creighton and then the Suns. That was my basketball for last night.
I know. I've heard. Ayton is what, the best player now in the NBA. He's turned the corner. He's taken over the league. He's fine now. Is that right?
Well, last night it certainly looked that way. It's kind of what we've been hoping for him to do for quite a while now. And the last couple games, he's been a completely different player than he was the first several this season. So totally dominated that game last night, and that is a great sign for the Suns moving forward, considering their guards aren't playing nearly up to the level that they can at this point.
Hey, so let's you've probably already seen this already. You know, the Boys and Girls State Basketball Tournament is huge to Lincoln financially. Last couple of years, last year and this year, it won't be as financial for that town. But they're not going to let that tournament go. And even in a year where you can't use the Devaney Center because of Nebraska volleyball being in there, the NSAA today said we're going to expand the tournament. We're going to make it 5 days. It'll all be in Lincoln. Majority will be at Pinnacle Bank Arena. C2, D2 will play some games at local high schools. The format, as I see it, four Class A games will be played on a Tuesday. Normally, you get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and some teams, with the emotion of Thursday and Friday, when they get to Saturday, they're not up to, I mean, they're not on the same level after playing two games the day before. I think spreading out the Class A and two games in Class B, two on Tuesday and Wednesday, I think this could really work with a five-day tournament that maybe, Jacob, us that want more basketball could maybe convince the NSA that this is a thing they should keep.
Yeah, that'll certainly be interesting to see kind of how it impacts the level of play and everything. Like you said, the 3 day grind can be really tough on teams at times, and the later we get in the tournament, it's not always the best basketball as teams are kind of digging deep and giving it their all. But 5 days, it's going to be a lot of basketball, especially for people like me that are there start to finish. But it'll also potentially give me a chance to see more teams. That's kind of the one downside of the tournament and how it's set up and having so many games at once and different sites is there's always teams that come to Lincoln that I would have liked to have seen, but I've got to watch the Class A game or the Class B game. I just post up at PBA and spend the whole tournament there. So hopefully kind of this format will give me a chance to see a couple more teams, but it could be a long week of basketball, that's for sure.
See, I would, if I was running the NSA from basketball, if I was taking over John Dolliver's job, I would say we're going to make it a six-day tournament. All the games are going to be at Pinnacle Bank Arena. We're going to start on Monday. We're going to finish on Saturday. All the same site, so somebody could watch all the games. You could stay in one spot and watch all of the games. But I'm not in charge of the NSA.
I wouldn't object. I guess at a certain have to figure out. All right, with school and work and all this kind of stuff, be interesting. Just kind of the logistics of scheduling it out and taking up that much time and the travel for teams that come in from outside of the metro and everything. But yeah, it's. I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out. It'll definitely feel different, but like I said, I think there are definitely some upsides to it as well.
So every time Millard North plays and they beat Omaha Central the other night, Tim Cannon won his 500th game as a head basketball coach. You know, there's a great respect for Coach Cannon. He's mentored a lot of young men throughout his career, and to hang around long enough to win 500 games is impressive. And it's kind of cool at a school like Millard North. You've got Tim Cannon, who just hit 500 wins, and you got Fred Petito, who has been the head football coach for nearly four decades, who is one of the all-time winningest coaches. You know, having those two as a combo. But it seems like every time Millard North plays, and they're still unbeaten, St. Thomas plays well, or Jason Green has a good night, which both of them had a good night against Central the other night. You maybe get this, I get this. Okay, what is Nebraska doing? Let's first start with St. Thomas, who had 21 the other night. He got an offer from Florida Atlantic. His offer list is a lot of mid-major programs, some interest from some Power 6 programs. What do you think happens with his recruiting? And I know I probably ask you this every other week, but after he has good games, people are acquiring. What is going to happen in-state with him? Where do you think his recruiting is going?
Yeah, that's probably the one that I'm most interested in, and just because his story is so different, with as such a late bloomer who kept growing and who has continued to get better and better, kind of each step from where he was two summers ago to where he was in the high school season to where he was this past summer and to where he is now. He's just been a different player at each stage and continues to get better. And you mentioned Florida Atlantic the other day. Murray State and Bradley are the other two that have kind of offered recently and kind of dived in. I've been trying to figure out where exactly he projects at this point, kind of like with the progress he's shown. And obviously there haven't been any new power conference schools to kind of dive in the mix yet. So he's 6'6", 6'7", kind of in that range. He's shooting the lights out this season, and that's kind of been a huge development for him, as he's kind of more of a streaky shooter previously. And now, he didn't have a great day from the arc against Central, but he's shooting around 50% on the season. And there's some tough shots, too. It's not all wide-open catch-and-shoot stuff. And he's continued to, I think, get a little bit better shape, a little bit more mobile. I think the biggest question, just talking to coaches and kind of putting some feelers out, I think the biggest question is defense and kind of who does he guard at the next level. He's a bit of a tweener. Can he stay in front of guys on the perimeter? Can he hold his own inside against fours? I think that's kind of the biggest question that coaches are looking at right now as far as trying to project him, whether some higher-level coaches would feel comfortable offering. So all he's got to do is kind of keep up what he's doing now. I know some coaches are certainly watching, but at this point I'm still that mid-major level is where he's at right now, and that's kind of what I'm hearing.
So the class of 2022 in this state, Isaac Trout from Grand Island, who is the number one player in the 22 class, and he continues to rise up. He's a top 100 player nationally. Just got an offer from Virginia. I mean, his rise is amazing, and these offers that are noteworthy, well deserved. I mean, he's gonna have some nice options when he finally decides what school he's gonna go to. Nebraska offered him early. They also offered Jason Green early, who I thought played really well the other night against Central. And he sometimes gets lost in the abundance of you know, the Hunter Salises and the St. Thomases that get a lot of attention. Jaden Johnson as well, because he's not in that senior class. But what are your thoughts on how he's played this year and kind of where his recruitment is going? Because I think Nebraska was the first offer that he got when he was a sophomore.
Yeah, and he was one of the guys I wrote about in my story from that Millard North Central game. And he wasn't one of the leading scorers, but did have a double-double. And what I was impressed with his defense, he was the one they put on Denham Johnson. And Denham tore him up in that first game. I think he had like 18 and 14. and was really doing work inside. And this game, they kind of put Jason on him and really focused on making life tough for him. And Denham had 14 points, but it was on 5 of 12 shooting, and only he had half as many offensive rebounds as he did the last game. So Denham's about 6'1 guard, freak athlete, just incredibly explosive. But you got a 6'7 forward kind of sitting down in front of a 6'1 guard and kind of making life tough for him. And that's kind of the key to Jason's game, is just the versatility, the kind of filling all the gaps, the rebounding, the defense, whether it's protecting the rim or sliding out and staying in front of guards. That's kind of where his strength lies right now, and he's continuing to improve offensively. I think it'll be interesting to see next year how he develops as more of a primary offensive player, with Sane and Hunter moving on, obviously. Right now he's kind of just fine playing his role and being the guy, like, hey, if the ball comes to me in the right situation, I'm going to go to work. But otherwise, I'm going to crash the glass, I'm going to space the floor, I'm going to set some screens, and I'll get mine when it comes to me. So he's got a handful of high major offers right now that he's sitting on, and he's a guy that hopefully we can have a somewhat normal AAU season this summer, because I think that's kind of where he's going to be able to solidify where kind of where he belongs and what that top group of teams is, as he kind of hopefully gets to play at a high level this summer against real good competition and show how much he's developed. Because last summer he kind of played part time with Team Factory. MoCan Elite didn't have a season. They did some camp within their own program and streamed it and gave that info to coaches. So that was, he did get a chance to go and participate in that, but otherwise it was just kind of not a big summer for him in terms of exposure and really proving himself. So he's a guy heading into big summer, big senior year next year, to see just how high he can go. But right now he's kind of filling his role and doing it very well.
Let's talk about last night, Creighton and Providence. And, you know, Ed Cooley's one of the good guys in the sport, and Creighton and Providence always play very interesting games. There's something peculiar happens, it seems like, every time they play, and they're close games that usually come down to the final couple of possessions. Last night, it did. Out in Rhode Island, it came down to the final possession. But how do you explain last night's game, Jacob? We knew Providence, they had to get a victory. If they have any hope of going to the NCAA tournament, they need to come in. They need to come on the road and beat a nationally ranked team. And they came out inspired for the first 10 minutes, and they jumped up big, and then Creighton kind of settled in. But how do you explain the beginning of the game, and maybe even the beginning of the second half, that had Creighton climbing uphill all night long, and they could never get back and eventually fell by four?
I wish I could, but I can't. I don't. It was so bizarre. They got off to 1-12 start from the field, and three of those were layups. Three of those misses, or they went 1-3 on layups, 0-3 on intermediate shots, and 0-6 on threes. And like, they were getting some decent looks throughout that stretch. They just couldn't make anything, and it was far too easy for Providence on the other end. And some of those misses were leading directly into Providence. Easy looks in transition, just with some of the bounces and the way it came off the rim and kind of started the Providence fast break. So just everything was going wrong. And they eventually kind of righted the ship a little bit, mostly because of Damian Jefferson. And he had a heck of a game offensively. And but, I mean, you look at Mitch Ballack, Denzel Mahoney, Antoine Jones and Alex O'Connell combined to go 3-for-25 from the field. That's just not going to work, especially when their defense just wasn't where it was the first time. They did a good job on the perimeter again, limiting David Duke and A.J. Reeves to 3-of-19 from the field combined. But after making life tough on Nate Watson in the first game, He just got way too many easy looks. Providence did a great job of kind of executing their offense to get him right at the rim, and Creighton just wasn't there. The help was late, or the help was too small, and he just finished over it, or the effort on the ball just wasn't good enough to prevent those passes from happening. I mean, it was kind of a flat effort at times, but a lot of that, I think, was kind of the offensive struggle. And it's just bizarre to see so many guys that completely off. And Mahoney coming off that 23-point half, one attempt from the field this game, and 0 for 5 from 3. And a lot of those, again, were good looks that just weren't even close. He was throwing up some bricks. So it's just frustrating to see this kind of performance, especially coming off that Butler loss. You get Marcus back. He played all right. He had a solid game, but then everybody else kind of falls off the cliff outside of Jefferson, Bishop, and Zagorowski. So it's just kind of frustrating to see what we thought this team could be and how close they were twice now to cracking the top five, which is something we've never seen them do. And now it's kind of looking more like a typical Creighton season, which is still good. You still got all your kind of goals out there in front of you, but you couldn't really afford this loss, especially with kind of how the non-conference went and how the conference is stacking up too. Like, there just aren't that many opportunities for great wins, so you needed a gaudy record, and now you've got a couple of a few bad losses here without really great wins to offset it.
How do you explain second in the league now in three-point shooting percentage? And that's been a problem the last two games, because they're 10 of 46 in the last two games. But second in the league in three-point shooting, but next to last in free-throw shooting.
So part of that problem is Damian Jefferson is one of the guys that gets to the line the most often. And he is struggling mightily.
It does look like it's a mental thing now.
Yeah, definitely. Like, he's never been a good free throw shooter, but he wasn't sub 500 or sub 50, and he's right at the 50% mark right now. That's just not going to work. And the biggest problem there too is, and we saw it in that Butler game, if he's kind of emerged as one of your go-to guys, and you can't really trust that in the clutch, if you can't afford for him to get fouled, and you went and missed two in that last game. And so that's a significant problem. And at one point, Mahoney was shooting 82% earlier this season. He's missed three or four front ends in the last few games. So even that's double, that kind of counts double in terms of leaving points on the line. And Christian Bishop, we knew, wasn't a great free throw shooter. Mitch Ballack hasn't got there, Tom, but he's missed a lot. It's just, for whatever reason, they are just struggling mightily this season. And again, a lot of it is guys don't get to the line a lot. It's a huge part of anybody's game on the team. And when you go and take maybe one trip to the line all game, perhaps that's part of it. Like, you just don't shoot them that often, and so you go up there cold from the free throw line. And nobody's getting to the line more than two trips per game. Bishop's leading the team in 3.4 attempts per game. So it's just kind of those, they really stick out in your mind because they're big moments. They're guys that haven't gotten the line a ton, stepping up there and then miss it. And it's really costing you. And I don't really know what it is. Some of these guys have just been poor free throw shooters for their career, and sometimes there's not much you can do about that. It's not like they don't practice it. Some of it's got to just be mental. And you can't really do anything about that except just keep working, try not to think about it too much, and hope that kind of the training and the muscle memory and everything will take over at some point.
Help me with this one. And I agree with you in the shooting beyond the arc and at the free throw line. Help me with this one. You are Dan Hurley this weekend. You're Patrick Ewing. You're Steve Wojciechowski. You're Jay Wright. And you're looking at how Creighton has played the last couple of weeks. and you're designing a defensive game plan with the five that are on the floor for Creighton, what does your scouting report say on what to do with Mitch?
Well, the scouting report is just leave someone in his jersey. Don't give him any clean looks. And kind of you don't have to worry about much beyond that at this point. He's so valuable in his ability to space the floor and take a defender out of the kind of rest of the defensive flow in terms of help and protecting the rim and all that kind of stuff. And he's such a good ball mover. But at a certain point now, last couple games particularly, and it's not just that he's not getting shots off, it's that he's missing the good ones and then not creating any more opportunities. He had a really, really good look in that game last night, catch wide open left wing, and just didn't make it. Like, that's a shot that has to go in at this point, especially if teams are putting some of their better defenders and making him a focus of the scouting report. So he's got to be able to do more, whether it is Mac running more sets to try to spring him, or it's just more aggressiveness from him, and not even just pulling from three. It's, we saw that layup at the end there, where he put it on the deck, went to the basket, and finished over the top of the defender. Like, he's got that in him. He's not so physically limited that he can't go do that at this level. He's just got to be a little bit more aggressive in understanding how teams are defending him and taking advantage of that, because they still need him to score in addition to all the intangible things he's doing as far as, again, spacing the floor and getting other guys looks. If he's out there playing the minutes he is and other guys are struggling the way that they were last night, like Denzel getting 10 shots and making just one, at a certain point, Mitch has got to step up and be like, all right, somebody, it's not working tonight. Somebody else has to step up and take some of these shots. And it's got to be him, because, again, Butler put Aaron Thompson on him right off the gate and kind of hanging on to him and making it tough for him to get free off of any kind of off-ball screens, anything. And last night, I think it's kind of the same thing, where it's like you just know where he is and keep a guy out there. And right now, you're taking him mostly out of the game. So he's got to be able to adjust. They need more out of him. He's got to be more aggressive. And again, there are different ways that aggressiveness can manifest itself. And he's got to figure out the best way to help the team at this point.
And there are times where, and I agree with you absolutely on being more aggressive, because we have seen that in him. But there is also that little part of, because of the attention that he gets, man, I'd love to be Jefferson or Mahoney because it opens up the floor for me. But when they're struggling, and Jefferson wasn't struggling last night, he had 26, you do need Mitch to step up and hit shots that are not from 35 feet away. We'll see. I'm going to go back to something you said about him. I do agree about, if you can get him in the flow of the offense where you run sets for him instead of, okay, these are the Mitch shots we've been used to that are in the flow of the game, you run something for him. If that helps him get going and increases the aggressiveness and maybe forces the opposition to adjust how they guard him and how they pay attention to the other three or four on the floor.
Yeah, and if it's a set play where you're kind of, all right, this is the goal here, more as opposed to, all right, here's a read within the flow of just kind of our typical motion offense here. Maybe that will kind of get it into his head, like, all right, this is what this play is for. I gotta do my part. I gotta come in. I gotta knock down this shot.
Yep. Let's get you out here on this because volleyball starts this weekend. You think John Cook knows what Nebraska did the last time they were preseason number five? I say that sarcastically. I noticed he's brought it up a couple of times. Is that his driving little jab for his team to go into that extra gear? Like, they didn't need any motivation. They're already really good. But what is the motivation with this group that has got an abundance of talent and has tasted success before? What's the thing that drives them through this odd season?
Oh, yeah, you mentioned the number five ranking. You got a little bit more of it yesterday when the Big Ten coaches picked them to finish third behind Minnesota. It's interesting that the Big Ten coaches have or I guess the national coaches had more respect for Nebraska than the conference ones did. But I think the motivation is falling in the Elite Eight last year and getting destroyed by Wisconsin three straight times. It's kind of like, all right, this really paints a picture that we just weren't good enough. And we're bringing everybody back now. We have a chance to fix that. And a lot of it was kind of the passing and serving. That was the biggest problem in those Wisconsin matches, where Wisconsin basically got to do whatever they wanted all game long, and Nebraska never really got into it. So that, and kind of, again, you got some seniors on this team that they could come back next year if they wanted to, but like all seniors in every sport, it's not an easy an easy discussion or decision, because sometimes people are ready to be done with school and move on to the life. Sometimes they have professional opportunities. So that's something that all these seniors are going to have to kind of deal with at the end of the year. But for now, you got Jazz Sweet, Lexi Sun, and Lawrence Diverns as seniors kind of making one last go of it. At least that's kind of how they're treating heading in. And we'll see kind of at the end if that's different. But they're going to leave it all out there, and you got these juniors that have kind of gone through the last couple of years with Nicklin Haynes and everybody else on the team. So you've got some experience, but this is kind of like, hey, last year Cook said even, like, this is kind of like a two-part process here. Last year was kind of the first half. So now we're at the 50-yard line is kind of how he explained it. And they're heading towards the goal line here. So this is kind of all this talent coming together. This is now the season to kind of make their run. And they've got some tough teams ahead of them. Wisconsin brought most of their players back as well. Dana Retke's still there. Sidney Hilly, the top setter in the conference, is still there. So they're going to have to go take it from them. So I think there's no shortage of motivation for this team, especially coming off of how long this offseason was and everything they've had to do to get to this point to where they can play.
So what was it, 400 days they've been off? Does that sound right?
It was 13 months or so.
Wow. I know she said it the other day. One quick one here. Lexi Sun is kind of preparing that this is her last go around. What do you think would change her mind to come back for the fall?
Yeah, it's interesting. She said she was kind of heading into it with that thought in mind, because she didn't want to kind of put that thought out there, like, for the other players and for herself, that, I've got another chance at this if this doesn't go well. She wants to kind of put everything she's got into this season. But she also said, we definitely got that opportunity. I'm going to have to see how this season goes. So that would be interesting, like, if they have a disappointing season, would that be more motivation to come back? Or if they do go all the way or Final Four, is that what would get her to, like, we're so close, we got to run this back? I don't know. It's something that only she knows at this point. But it'll be interesting to see kind of what her opportunities are. Does she have professional opportunities that she needs to weigh as opposed to coming back for another year? Like, it's a little different with her. Lawrence Diverns had a redshirt year, so she'd be coming back for a sixth year of college. Lexi's a true senior, so it would only be a fifth year for her, and that's something a lot of college students do. So she's got a lot of things to consider, but like I said, at this point, she's just kind of focusing on giving it her all now and hoping to have the best season that they can.
Great stuff, Jacob. I know you're a little bit busy, got balanced a couple of different sports. I appreciate your time as always. We'll see you out and about this weekend.
All right, sounds good. It should be fun.
That's Jacob Padilla from Hale Varsity. So help me with this, George. So Nebraska volleyball in this in a weird season. College volleyball starts this weekend. Omaha and Creighton are playing. Nebraska takes on Indiana. I advise you to listen to John Baylor on the radio. But if you can't get to the radio, Nebraska volleyball will be everywhere. So there's a lot of options to watch them. I've heard from a couple of my friends who they're football, basketball, baseball Nebraska fans. They're aware of the other sports, and they're aware, of course, the success of volleyball and how big volleyball is, but they don't know much about the sport, and so they don't dabble in it. because their falls are consumed with football. I heard from one of them yesterday, and he was trying to get information on volleyball, what to look for. And I don't know if that is from the success of sports in Nebraska has been so poor of late that now it's time to hop onto a sport that you know is really, really good, that has national title aspirations, and those are real. Or it's, you know what? Man, I'm not a volleyball fan. I have no idea what's going on. Libero, Libro, what is that? that people are like, okay, I'm watching.
Yeah.
You John Cook, good on you. You've drawn us in, and now I'm paying attention. And I think that this will be, and it's going to be a short season. It's only the Big Ten, but the Big Ten is a great volleyball conference.
Fantastic.
They will gain more fans here in the spring because Nebraska fans just want to put their arms around a winner and a very likable group from the head coach all the way down.
Yeah,
I think the Nebraska volleyball fan base, which is already pretty strong, and the loyals are very loyal, will garner more fans. Why not? They're a winner. And you can take it as a slight against Nebraska, as we were talking with Jacob.
There you go.
Third in their own conference. What the?
Whew. I saw that yesterday. I was like, oh, boy.
You don't do that to John Cook. He'll find a way.
Mm-mm.
He'll find a way. That's good, though. That's good. We need somebody that's petty running the program.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, coming up a little bit later, Brody Darren. We'll get his thoughts on last night for Creighton, tying that in with Butler and how you fix some of the things. Or is it just January? Teams go through this. We're sitting on January 21st, or is it something deeper? But it's probably, you know, you talked about Providence getting a nice spot on the resume last night with a victory. Creighton's got to grab some spots on the resume for good victories instead of losses. So Brody will join us at 1. Darren DeVries, who has got the undefeated Drake Bulldogs, they're coming off a COVID pause. He will join us at 1:30, so we're looking forward to catching up with D-Rock. That's all still to come on a Local Music Thursday on the Gary Sharp Show with George in 1620 The Zone.